Coffee. Welcome, everybody, to Masterclass this week. We have three presenters tonight, being May 4th. May the 4th be with you. We are here and we're going to enjoy this evening together. Looking forward to these three. And we have I just put the agenda up and I need to find it. Here we go. We have Jonathan Ullery for IT Project Management Career Path, Roy Mandelbaum, Recording Software and Issues and How to Fix Them, and Alyssa Prater with Blockchain and TikTok, maybe? Okay, so Jonathan, are you ready to start?
Absolutely. Ready as I'll ever be.
Take it away.
All right, let's make sure. Can everybody see my screen?
Yes.
All right. All right, so diving into IT project management as a career path. First thing we are going to see is, what is IT project management? So there are two different paths of IT project manager. So it is, one is a IT project manager that is, and they typically work for the company, and they are on the company's payroll and will do most of their IT projects. The more popular way now, as far as the trend has been going, is the IT consultants are being brought in to lead IT projects for companies, and it's more of a one-time just contract deal. And they typically, you'll actually even start to see them on Indeed, and they're very popular now, where they are contract positions for 6 months or 1 year, and they will just hire them like that. Assigned to organizations to help achieve IT goals. As I said, as far as the consultants go, they're contracted and they do not work for the company. And then the types of projects that these guys do. So they do new software solutions. They set up clouds, introduction of IT to the business. These can be IoT solutions. These can be setting up new servers, converting into cloud projects, building websites as our projects are, and just they can oversee almost anything, anywhere from networking clear through the back end and security systems. And then they either have a team with them and they're usually brought in with their IT consulting firm, or it is going to be a bid and they are going to be contracted a budget to fill out and bring on a team via bids. So what does an IT project manager do? So normally they do not just have one project. Usually if they are with a company, they are supposed to provide analysis. They are supposed to do a complete overhaul of what the IT system is. They will typically have a couple different stages of the project that they're going to have to go through, because whenever they do their original analysis, they have to bring it and get it approved by the board or the management, and things like, and whoever's overseeing that part for the company. The proposal and the budget will be done by the IT consultant or IT project manager. Both of these typically have to be approved by the stakeholders. So this does take some time going back and forth with the company and the IT manager. They are 100% responsible for managing the budget. And this is something that it becomes very difficult for an IT project manager, because as we all know, as we're all in the IT field, sometimes things don't go well and solutions don't work out. And one of the hardest things in this field is that you're managing that and your budget's going great, and then a solution doesn't work. And now you have to find another solution or kind of turncoat and go to a whole different provider, and it can blow the budget very quickly. That's why when you see budgets for companies at the end of the year, one thing that you will typically notice that they're going to go over on is their IT budget. This is going to be part of the reason why as well. So the progress all goes to the stakeholders to ensure the project meets the deadline. What the stakeholders are looking for as far as results go, you need to make sure that you're meeting their vision, and you have to make sure that the project is going according to what their expectations were. This is where the budget can kind of get out of control too, because you could be, you want to make sure to check in very often, because you don't want to be 3 months into a project and check back with the stakeholders 3 months in and they say, that's not what we wanted at all, which sometimes you will see, because them not being in the IT world and their view is that's what you're here for. So you must make sure that their vision is met each step of the project to make sure that the budget or the timeline does not get affected. So they also have to do the risk management on every step of the project. So this will, they'll need to present to the company as well, because in the IT world, when you're making changes to a company, there's also risk involved. So things like, does this integrate with your systems that you currently have? Things like, is this going to make you more vulnerable to an attack? So say that we're switching from a server system to a cloud system. So yes, you're going to be a little bit more vulnerable because we're now open and in a cloud network is exposed as opposed to everything being contained in this system. So the risks are all going to fall on you as well, and you will have to give every single risk possible to the customer that you're working for and make them aware of it. And then they also lead the testing team, usually when the project is complete, to ensure that the scope of the project is met, that the stakeholders are happy, that the system is up and running well, and it is basically doing what you said it was going to do. So how do you become an IT project manager? So the first thing you do is develop a relevant skill set for the job. So we will go a little bit over some of the skills and some of the things that a project manager looks for in the next slide following. But obviously it is IT based, but there are management properties, there are time management properties, there are leadership skills that people will look for in an IT project manager. There are a bunch of different project methodologies. So the Agile is probably the most popular in the field now. This is where you kind of take it step by step, and it's very easy to change directions or change the way that the project has to work. Normally, you are going back and forth very often with your stakeholder or your client and kind of compromising and working together. And you can take the project step by step. Scrum is also a newer version of project management. So the whole ideology behind Scrum is the project manager's sole job is to, once the project is listed out, is to remove problems and blockades from the project. So I use this in an example as we worked on digital collections. One of our biggest problems was figuring out the database. So I went out and I found us a partner that we can use their database and some of the things that they have to offer by becoming an affiliate for them. And that solves a big problem with us, therefore removing the blockade and allowing us to speed up the time frame to get the project up and running. Lean is actually exactly what you would think it means. So it is cutting the fat or trimming the fat from the project. So whenever a lean project is happening, usually a team is bringing you in so they can make sure that you are taking all of the excess out of a process or a system that are either costing them money or wasting resources. So they basically have you come in and do an audit or an analysis of a business or process, and then you kind of reformat that process for them and kind of trim the fat for them. And then last but not least is the older waterfall model. This is where you go literally step by step and you lay out the entire project before anything is begun. So a lot of things do still use waterfall just because they need that structured step-by-step dead time frame. You will see the government and military still using a lot of waterfall projects because they like to have everything planned out so they can foresee what the next 3, 6, 9, 12 months are going to look like while they're working on this project. The downfall of waterfall is it is very structured. So that means your budget is all structured out already. Your timeline is all structured out already. So if you need to do a change, you actually have to do a change order on a waterfall project, and that will change your budget, and then it will also change your timeline. The problem is whatever step you are in. So let's say that we're halfway through the project, we put a change order in. So now our budget is affected. So we have to figure out our budget and our timeline from the point we are in the project and then redo everything behind that, because now this is probably all going to affect that and it's going to change. And then the flow of the project, you go initiation, planning, executing, closing. That is just a very broad overview. We will dive in later and I will show you some of the tools that break that down even further. Start building experience and the portfolio. So get into project support roles, get some certifications, which we will go over some certifications that you can use. To kind of get into this job frame, and things like internships, jump into a project, or helping out and get underneath a project manager. That's all great things to start experience so you can start the path to do it. And then tailor your resume. So the big important thing is you will find that a company looking for an IT project manager is not looking for your normal skill sets. They're going to look for leadership. They're going to look for innovation. They're going to look for thinking outside the box. So you have to tailor your resume to highlight those skills that you have in order to make it look promising and want to take the chance on you. So the useful certifications to have is a certified associate in project management. A project management professional is probably the number one certificate that is looked at. It is very respected and sought after. From what I hear and from kind of looking into the material and studying myself, is one of the hardest certifications to acquire. You can do a Agile certified practitioner, a professional in project management. This is a great starter. So once you have this certificate, it's a little bit easier to obtain than your PMP. And then you will start picking up roles as project support, and you can start getting into project management teams pretty regularly with this certification. The CompTIA Project Plus is a great, everybody likes to see the CompTIA, and there's different, obviously, organizations that it follows. It is no different in project management. It is a very well-respected certificate and well sought after. Certified Project Manager, now you do have to have 5 years in the field for this one. And then certifications are a plus, but not necessary for your first job. If you are looking to get into any kind of senior project management or any advanced project management, they will want you to have your PMP at the very least. So let's look at some average pays and see, you know, is this even a viable career? So I went on national averages. I will tell you, in the IT field, it is higher than some of the other fields of project management. So your support role, you're looking at $80,000 to $85,000 a year. Your project manager, and this is entry level experience, is going to be about $95,000. Technical project manager, these are typically the people that are overseeing IT teams and overseeing network overhauls in a business. They're 117. Senior IT Project Manager. Now, this one is typically the one that will actually work for a company. Senior IT Project Managers, or even senior IT managers, typically kind of fill this role as well. They'll usually stay with the one company, and they are the lead of the IT department and kind of oversee all the projects in their company. Then you add your certifications. So in most jobs, there is a slight pay bump for having certifications. In project managers, people that have certifications in the project manager world, they can be a significant pay increase from 10 to 20,000, especially having your PMP. So you can walk in and ask for at least a 10 to 20% raise off of what they're offering if you have the PMP cert. And then the IT project consultants, and these are a senior level, so the qualifications are they have their certification, they've spent more than 5 years in the field, and they have at least 10 projects under their belt, they're going to look at 180 plus. These are also usually your guys that are working on contracts, as we spoke earlier, so they're not signing with any company or anything like that. They'll either work for a big IT firm, or they'll just do contract work and sign contract to contract. So tools of the trade. So you will create documents to win the job or present a plan of action as a business proposal. So the biggest thing to win a job as a project manager, they're going to want to see your plan of action and your business proposal right off the bat, and that's kind of your interview for the job. Unfortunately, in this line of work, if you're in the top three, you will probably get some feedback, but if you're one of 10 and they didn't even consider you as top, you don't even know what you did wrong because they're not even going to bother calling you back. You have to get very good at writing business proposals because, as I said, this is the only thing that they are looking at. And some companies, unfortunately, don't go off of skills. They go off of pricing as well. So you'll definitely have to learn your audience. Some of the things that the business proposal will contain is the scope of work, the risk assessment, and the return on investment projections for the company. Those can be very hard to figure out, especially because you don't exactly know all of the parameters of the project, but you will have to make an educated guess, and that's where we talk that the experience is really coming in and able to help you out in this matter, because I've done these types of projects, I've seen what customers, and that will help you secure that ROI projection portion of it. They always can be countered by the client. So you might say that this is going to take 12 months. They will come back and say, you know what, we love your plan, we love your budget, but we want you to do it in 7. And that's where that kind of negotiation will go from there. And then you will turn it in at the end of the job on one of the not so fun parts of project management is there's a lot of documentation. You have to be very organized, and you will turn in everything at the end of the project. SWOT analysis. So that is a acronym, and it is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. The business wants to see how these look, and it basically will show them what the companies around them are doing, some of what they're doing well, some of what they could definitely work on. And the big thing that they always look at is threats to their company. So what is this process going to do in changing how we do business and what our security needs to be? This will be one of the things that you turn in with your business proposal. So it is usually done before you even win the project. You will help the business decide on, based on this SWOT analysis, where they will head in the future. And then you will end up doing a SWOT analysis after your project is complete. And then you can kind of compare and show the improvements and what their new SWOT analysis looks like. And this also helps the project manager devise the plan of attack. So once you know a little bit about the company, then this helps tailor how you're going to do the project. work breakdown structure, or a WBS form. So this is a detailed form that breaks down the scope, the cost, and resources needed for a project. This probably is one of the most time-consuming parts of being a project manager. This usually is done at the beginning of the project, and with Agile and Scrum, it is a little more fluid and easy to create because you kind of go step by step. In the waterfall that we talked about earlier, this takes a good amount of time to complete, as you have to go through and do the entire project. It will help the PM create the Gantt chart. So the Gantt chart is what will control your timeline. Thankfully, now that you have software like Microsoft Project and ClickUp, which I prefer actually to use, it is easy to put your tasks in. And as you are putting your tasks in and your times and dates, it will autofill. And I will actually show you an example of that here in a little bit. And it will turn the this actually turns your project into all of your measurables. So when you go and you start to track your project, if you win the project, you will have a step-by-step guide of it. You'll be able to check off timeline and project attainables with the work breakdown structure. And then the Gantt chart. So the Gantt chart is the timeline for tracking, as we talked about. Some of the softwares that I alluded to before. And then there are actually a bunch of free tools that you can actually start practicing. And some of the things as you're building a portfolio, and actually if you're interested in applying for some project management jobs, I encourage you to do some test versions of these. Show that you can put one together. Because one of the harder things as a project manager is documentation. So somebody wants to see that you are organized, that you can document, and you know how to use these tools. They're not used a whole lot in the outside world when you're not doing projects and things like that. So these tools are some of the ones that you don't find people having skills. Like, everybody knows how to use Excel, for example. Does everybody know how to put together a Gantt chart? No, probably not. So being able to show that you can fill these out and do some work is a fantastic leg up in your competition. And finally, it is a request for a proposal. This kind of goes with the business proposal. But the business proposal is when you are trying to win the bid. The request for proposal is when you win the bid, and now you actually have to bring your plan, your budget, and your final timeline to the customer. It will act as a contract. They will hold you to it, I promise you, every single time, to the dollar and to the minute. Pretty much two things you can guarantee. It is all the materials that are going to be used in the project, and that will include if you actually have to go out and get bids for third parties or other companies to do work as well. PM and client will actually make a lot of these decisions together when you guys are starting to do RFPs and bids on some of the materials and some of the people that must work on the job. You have to complete this before you can set a finalized budget, just because obviously if you are taking bids to outsource some of the work, you have to have that bid before you can put in the final budget. And then you need to add a cost sheet to the Gantt chart, and that'll be some of the documentation that you will turn in at the end of the project as well. So I brought some examples of the tools that we had talked about. So these are from some of the classes that I've taken here, some of the projects that I have done, and things like that. So first, we're going to take a look at a SWOT analysis. Maybe we're going to take a look at a SWOT analysis. All right. So let's look at a cost sheet first. I'll pull up the SWOT analysis in a second. I have that in a separate folder. All right. So we talked about the work breakdown structure. So as you can see in the left hand, so you have to break every single project down. And so as you see here, office relocation is step number one. Now, in step number one, there are five different pieces that we have to have done in that step. So then you just start breaking it down as you see to the left. And so the project, it ends up having five steps. Still, everything has to be detailed. Your timeline has to be detailed. Your start and end dates have to be detailed. And your costs also will be detailed. And all of your totals end up always going at the top in these kind of breakdowns. This is very important to a customer. They look at this document very sincerely. It shows that you are organized. It shows that you have a very detailed plan of what your timeline looks like. And this that sheet right there can win or lose you a job with them just looking at that and nothing else. This is a different view of the work breakdown sheet. This is a little bit more description and writing into it. This is before the cost of the budget is added into it. So this will typically be when you do your business proposal, you'll do a very high level of your work breakdown. Gantt charts. Now, this one I did with this one I actually built in Excel and not Microsoft Project. But as you can see, your steps will be listed on the left-hand side. This was actually developed for, this was for a web development and a very simple breakdown. I think it ended up being built in just a few weeks. And you'll see how the dates run along the top. These will usually be color-coded. So if you run late on a project, it will go red. I always typically used blue if something is running on track, and then green once it is completed. It's always been easier for me that way to do that. And then if it's in progress, we actually put it in yellow. Sometimes as a project manager, you will not be dealing with a whole local team. So I did a project that did a project when I worked at Verizon, where the company's tech support was in Spain. So you will have to write a plan on how you plan on dealing with that. And this basically details the time breakdowns, the frequency of your communications, who needs to be on team meetings, and what time it will be for every single person on that meeting, because it's something you have to consider, especially when you start to get into 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours of difference in time. Your business proposal, this is what wins you the job. And basically what you do is the project, and then you break down the summary, your objectives, the strategies, what you will need as far as a team to complete it. You will do a little bit of a demo of your work breakdown structure, a little bit of your budget and some of the costs that you think a customer will be interested in, and your method of communication. You win the job, your customer and you will sign it, and it becomes a contract. Responsibility grid is always color-coded. You always have to have a key. This is the projects that are going to be completed, and these are who are going to be responsible for each one. This is a very simple level breakdown, just showing who is able to do what project, and if something goes wrong, it's who's getting yelled at. I will tell you, as a project manager, somebody else might be getting yelled at. Ultimately, you will be the one. And then finally, this is a work breakdown structure with all costs after the project and the bids are done. You will have to then submit another one on top, and you will have to show the customer and explain to the customer why the price was this when you bid it and why it is now after the bids are done. And that could be materials going up. That could be something going wrong with the project. That could be a team member that you had to fire and hire somebody else, but you will have to account for every dime, and you will be questioned on it. So you need to be able to speak to every single thing. And then that is it for me. So thank everybody for your time. And are there any questions that could be answered? Sydney.
Hey, Jonathan. So obviously you have a lot of experience being a project manager. Yep. What advice would you give someone who has never been a manager or overseer of any projects and who wants to take a step at it? What advice or steps would you give them to help them?
So as I talked before, when you go into the certifications, this guy right here, the professional in project management, is a great one to obtain. It is not very hard to do. It is not very expensive to take the test, and that will start to give you some experience, and it'll allow you to start getting on as like a project helper, and then you really start building experience. The other thing you can do is now with some of these online resources like Fiverr and things like that, you can jump in and as a freelancer and start getting involved in some projects and getting some experience that way as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Alyssa?
You actually answered my question as you were answering Sydney's. I was curious about which one of the certifications for project management were going to be the most cost effective to start with.
Yep. PPM is definitely the one that you want to go with right off the bat.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yep. All righty. Thank you guys so much. And I'll turn it back over to Marjorie.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. That was excellent, let me tell you, because it's always good for everybody to understand what a project manager has to do to make something come out of the project that, you know, we're building. And we have three projects, so we definitely have three project managers, if not at least one who's doing all the project management. But we definitely take on some interns that will do project management, too. If you want to learn it or work on it with somebody, we're definitely willing to go ahead and do that, too, to give you some training in it. I do have training in PM if you want to do that. I can give that to you in Planner as well. But that was excellent. Thank you so much. And you did really well with it. And it just shows me I can get a job as project managers, too.
Also, just a thing that I'm going to throw out is I am actually running Ancient Civ and Digital Collections. So if any of you guys are kind of want some experience in it, come on over to the project and I'll just turn you into an understudy and start showing you some things. And that way you can start building a portfolio.
There you go. Sounds awesome. Thank you. Perfect. All right, so next we're going to do Roy.
Okay, so all right. I am going to enjoy this one. Give me one second. Okay, you should all be able to see my screen now.
Yes.
Okay, why is it not starting? Doesn't want to start my slideshow. Okay. Okay, there we go. Nice. Okay. So I'm going to be talking about recording software. This is the main reason is this is my passion. I'm a musician besides doing this, so I enjoy this a lot. That's why this is going to be fun. So this does not deal with any of the recording meetings that we have. This deals with actual recording your voice or any type of audio before it gets recorded. Like right now, Marjorie's recording that. This does not deal with that. It's just when you record yourself. So this is my pet peeve. If you record video and audio together, always one's going to suffer. Editing options are limited. But if you don't want to record them together, because then you get improved quality for both, and this is a big deal, and you get more flexibility. And it really bothers me that, like, being a musician, audio is very important to me. That's the main reason. Now, these are recording software applications that I've used. This does not include streams. All of these you're able to get. All of these are easy to get. It just depends on what you're going to be using. I've used every single one of these on at least for 1 year of my life. And it's, they're fun. I like this stuff, but this is what you can get. And if what most of you will probably have would be Audacity. So I used as Audacity for all the recordings I have here. So, and I hate them. So I'm sorry to say, but the Audacity does not give me what I needed to do. So now, so these are the waves you get, you hear on a regular basis. The one that you hear in everyday life is known as a sine wave. The sine wave is what you hear, what you speak, and all of that. This is the wave that we're focused. I'm going to be focused on today. All these other waves do exist. I can tell you square wave is the second most common, triangle wave is third, and sawtooth is almost never used. You will never hear this one unless you're doing something weird. I've never even heard it. So, the Beatles are actually very important in this. They created many things when they were recording stuff. So, they created new things and also created a big issue that happened. So, I'm going to play you once some things are recorded.
No sound. I don't think you...
No sound? How?
Yeah.
No. What did it... can you hear that?
Yes.
Okay, so I have a keyboard next to me, so I'll just play something quickly. Okay. Something simple, nothing crazy. So with the flange, what it does, it's... I'll get back to that later, but chorus, it's two voices, so I just play this. It's just, it adds this another layer to it, and it's just kind of, it makes one voice sound like two. So if you wanted to sound like stuff like two, that's pretty common. And reverb is after you hit a note or anything, it's the remaining resonance after. So all that little. That's the whole entire sine wave actually going through. And what flange does, it allows you to make the sine wave deeper, extend it, do like kind of mess with it. So there's a gradual change, but it's a change that you can hear on a regular basis. Now, the reason why this happened with the Beatles is John Lennon hated his voice. This is not a joke. John Lennon hated his voice, and the Beatles... audio engineer at that time, what he created, the two tape method. So it's two different recordings going on. So John Lennon would not have to hear his voice, and it also created flange, chorus, and reverb. And the two tape method is still used to this day, and all of these are still used. And the issue that was created was digital reverb. I actually heard it about 2 weeks ago during AHA. There was a digital reverb going on with Doc's Corner that was, it's an issue for me, but you can hear how it works. It's kind of, if you're talking on the phone and then you hear a voice and then the other guy and then the other person on the other side answers. That's actually considered a type of reverb. And I don't know about you, but I get very annoyed by that. Okay, I don't know what happened. Okay. So this is how the chorus wave looks like. It's split off by no more than a millisecond. And it does add a bit of length to it. And it's very, very precise when it's done. Now, flange is the easiest way to think about it. When one wave is up, the other wave is down. It allows a lot more. You get to play with it a lot more, but a flange does not work unless it's a sine wave. All the other waves will not make it work correctly. This is actually a very important, and these in every song you listen to, you will hear one of these. And reverb, this is where So your ears naturally are able to connect all sounds they hear to create one sound. Reverb is just what bounces off. So whatever you hear me speak right now, you're actually hearing digital reverb. Reverb is just the natural thing, and your ears are picking up, if you have anything in your area, okay, it's going to hit that and then hit your ears, and then you're actually going to be able to hear. That's all reverb. You're not hearing any dry sound usually. Because if you look on the picture on the right, it's a giant stadium, and it goes, whatever is played bounces off every single wall, and by that time, you barely hear a dry sound. Because in this picture, there's 7 different sounds hitting you, but it's usually millions and millions. It's a very big thing that this would existed, but the Beatles created digital reverb, and this is where the problem comes in. Because reverb will give an issue to people when it exists. If it's not done correctly, and this does happen in meetings on Teams. I've had it happen in Zoom. I've had it happen everywhere. And it's just that whatever the sound bounces off of, it will come back to you, to your ears, and your brain and your ears will make it be one thing. Now, this is an issue that won't happen too often. I'm only going to get to issues that you guys might have to deal with on a regular basis. Now, this is how volume is measured. So this is a volume is measured like liters and meters. It's just decibels. There's semi-decimals, megadecimals, whatever we want. They exist in decibels. Now, around here is what you're going to hear on every single day. Every single day you're going to hear about 70 decibels. So you might, again, this is every day at work, driving your car everywhere, you're going to hit that 70 decibels normally. There's no issue with that. And just to show you, 60 decibels is half as loud as 70. So it's not exactly, it's not 70 and 35, it's 70 and 60. So there's a few, something, and again, you can see 1/4, 40, and it gives you nice stuff on the side. And this is all from Purdue. I found this on Purdue. Now, what you want to look at, this is where your ears are actually important, is 80 decibels is 2 times as loud. And I'm pretty sure you've all used any one of the things here or been next to it. And that means your ears have already had possible damage. And then, of course, it just keeps going up. I can tell you, you don't want to get up to here because then you're deaf. You're deaf for the rest of your life. And it's something you want to be careful about. And I can tell you, I'm at 120 decibels on a regular basis because I use a chainsaw. And I go to live rock music. All of this happens to you on a regular basis. You just don't think about it because it's not something that usually occurs. And this is why, back to this, there are recording decibels, which are done differently. So what I recorded, and it's at negative 12 decibels. So like what this was showed you the level, but when you record it shows you minus. It uses the same methodology, and the zero actually stands for 70 decibels usually. Now this is how Audacity shows it, and the thing to remember is, how do I put this, is all programs allow you to go, you are able to bring your volume down to zero, like negative infinity. But every single program I've used, you can only bring it up by plus 12 decibels. You can never bring it down. Now, because my sound isn't working, I wish I could show, I could talk. So there are three. So when you see your record, there's green, yellow, and red. Audacity doesn't show this. But I have to talk about green and yellow, red. It's just like lights. Green is good, yellow slow down, red is stop. And it just means same thing with recording. Green, you're good. Yellow, you wanna quiet down. Red, you're way too loud, you have to stop. This is issues that occur on a regular basis. Now, I hope you could hear this, but the second thing you're going to have to deal with when you guys record is going to be known as clipping. So clipping is when you hit right over here, that plus 12 area. What happens, you don't necessarily cut out, but everything kind of stops. It's just things are missing. Like if you're way too loud, you're all of a sudden your syllables are going to be missing. It's not clear. Everything just goes away almost. And I have had this actually happened also 2 weeks ago, that I remember that somebody, for some reason, their mic was way too loud and you hear screaming almost. And it's very, very delicate how it's used. And it's very important. Like, I personally disagree, but that this is just right. But again, as you see. Okay, I don't know what just happened. But did you guys hear that? Great, yeah. Okay. No, yeah, it was very loud. I don't know why. I hate that it's not working. I wish I could show you guys. But as you see, again, it's showing you negatives. It's not showing you the actual numbers of how loud it is. So it shows you plus 6, plus 12. Like I said, all programs only allow you to go up to 12. But you can see all the way down to minus infinity, depending on what you want. Which usually it's better to go down than to go up, as I was told. So if you ever somehow hit anything, you get the bad news. There's officially, if you are clipping, there's no way to fix it. You have to re-record because things will be missing, and usually it will be a syllable that you're missing, and even if you try to bring it down, it's not going to work. And with reverb, you might be able to get away with it, but you're still going to hear that reverb if it happens, because that's why you want to record in a place that is not, like, never record in, like, a brick room that's empty, because then you're just going to, it's going to have a lot of reverb, and it's not going to be clear, and it also adds extra volume. You always want to be recorded, like, in hopefully your home office. It's, like, not, there's stuff in there, it's small, and it's not going to bounce off too many walls before it actually hits the mic that you're using. That's actually something to, this is stuff that you want to keep in mind when you're recording, because this will happen. I can tell you, I have more issues that occur every time I go into a studio, but all of these have happened to me while I'm recording, either on Audacity, any program I've used. I've had these issues actually happen to me. It's just something to keep in mind. And this is something like when I know IT Support is doing the tutorial videos. Keep this in mind. You want to make sure you might not hate like your voice, but like I said, John Lennon also hated his voice, and he was an amazing singer. It's just something to keep in mind. You want to not necessarily care about what your voice sounds like. You want to care about the after effects of what can occur while you're actually recording. Are there any questions?
So when running sound, and obviously I've actually ran sound from bands and things in my younger life. So obviously one of the things that you hate doing is playing outside. So can you just kind of give us the rundown of why things, a band or anything like that, sounds so much worse outside as opposed to if you go see them at a club or a venue, something like that?
So a club and a venue or should be able to actually, they control their own sound. Usually they have a PA system. Outside, there's usually less control that it can be done to the band or artist who's playing. Because all it is, it's just kind of screaming out, and it's not necessarily going to sound worse. There's just less control over it, and you just got to trust whoever's like coming by or listening. Because I've played Porch Fest, I can tell you, I have no idea what it sounds like, but if I play in like a bar or a club or anything, I can actually hear myself because there's a speaker actually hitting me also. And I always have, and also, it's just something you gotta listen to yourself no matter what. That's why when you're recording, you gotta listen to it. You might hate how you sound, but you still got to listen to yourself because you want to avoid any issue that occurs while you're recording that you might not be aware of. Did I answer your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, it's very, this stuff is very also personal in a sense. Like for me, when 60 decibels hits, it bothers me and I have to put in earplugs usually. But other people, I've had people who are, when they're 90 decibels, so that's four times as loud as a regular 70. They are just fine. They can walk around, they go crazy, it doesn't matter to them. You just gotta make sure there's a standard that you need to follow to make sure everybody is actually okay with what you listen to. And it's very, very personal at the same time, but you gotta understand that there are issues that will occur that you need to fix. Alex, do you have a question? Any other questions? Okay, I guess that's it.
Well, Roy, that was excellent. Great job.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's not exactly, I told you, it wasn't like my first one. It's not Microsoft Streams. It's a lot more involved.
Yeah, this one is definitely when it comes to sound. Absolutely. But that's a good thing for those that if they're going to record different things or even make videos, it's good for them to understand that the sound, even though that we're taking it from one spot and we're doing it, I mean, even doing it on something simple, you know, you really should, to get a great video, you do separate the video from the sound. You want to redo the sound. You want to add to it. I mean, there's definitely different ways to do it, but that's basically what they do in the big world of.
Yeah, and it's very easy to do, actually. If you have Microsoft, there's Microsoft Video Editor, which you can easily, like, record a video, any free recording video. And again, most of you should probably use Audacity. Then you just edit the video itself. And it just adds the sound to the video because you did it at the same time. And you also make sure there's nothing too loud. And again, once you get it, it sounds great. I've done it multiple times. I have a whole entire YouTube page of just my band doing stuff, and all of it sounds great.
Sweet. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about OBS? How do you feel about that?
I don't feel good about that. I haven't really played done enough with that. I go.
Yeah.
Most of the time, my life has been involved. Because my bachelor's is in music with a minor in computer science. I've been in studios so many times that I've just been following studio standards over other standards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just me personally, like, I have, if I don't, like, OBS, I might be able to understand it in, like, a week or two, but I just, like, again, later this month, I'm back in the studio for no reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but.
Yeah.
No, studio standards is just what I live by.
Sounds good. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your presentation. Very good.
No problem.
All right, Alyssa, it is all yours.
Awesome. I'm not nervous at all. I don't know why, but the option to take control of the meeting has disappeared. It was here earlier and now it's gone. Oh, never mind. There's a share button. Let's see.
You might want to pop out and pop back in.
This will work. Can you guys see my screen?
Yes.
Fantastic. Okay. Blockchain and TikTok. I'm going to treat this a little bit like a TED Talk just because I consider myself a master of nothing because my degree has been pretty generalized. But I'm unsure how uncomfortable everyone is with the blockchain technology. Things that are new, complicated, and potentially dangerous reasonably tend to make us uncomfortable. We're hardwired to shy away from such feelings. At the surface level, blockchain was created to be nothing more than a decentralized database where no single node or user can make changes to the ledger. I was driven to get into technology because it and the other sciences is the closest thing to magic that is tangible to me. I search for magic because I believe the world needs it. I want the opportunity to bring a child into the world and give it the life I've dreamed of, the love, and show them how to love the way I wish I had been. I want that love for all children and people. I like to believe that this is the motivation behind many people wanting to have children. Can't say that I believe that it's a reality for very many. I know I'm incapable of having that experience in the current world. So a little over 4 years ago, I enrolled in college and dedicated myself to finding a way to make a big enough impact on the world that one day there won't be a need for us to dream of a better life for our kids. Switch to the next. That would still play in this silly. Fabulous. Okay. Blockchain 101. The concept of blockchain was introduced in a white paper in 2008 by a user operating under the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto. It was later actualized as the Bitcoin digital currency ledger in 2009. Users can join the Bitcoin network to buy and trade digital currencies without the need for a centralized entity to validate transactions or update the ledger. Since the launch of Bitcoin, hundreds of digital currencies have utilized the same technological approach and made an appearance in the market. Some of the new solutions have introduced new algorithms and concepts to improve scalability, security, and expand the functionality of their blockchain services. In any database, there are instances of activity that need to be recorded. Traditionally, these databases could be updated or changed by anyone who could gain the appropriate access permissions. In a typical blockchain network, every user has the same permissions, and these records or transactions are grouped together in blocks during a process called mining before they're finalized to the ledger, which is most often stored locally on each node participating in the network, and it's updated with each new addition. When a mining node or group called a mining pool has the best block constructed according to the stipulations outlined in the network's consensus algorithm, mining nodes perform a series of cryptographic operations to confirm the validity of the block by solving cryptographic puzzles or performing a series of stringent checks against the ledger. When the consensus algorithm is satisfied, the hash of the new block is created and added to the block, followed by the hash of the previous block. By referencing the previously generated block to each new block, the chain is created and each node can verify the integrity of each block by comparing hash values. Blockchains that are used in cryptocurrencies include elements known as coins and/or tokens that represent the currencies. Checking the movement of these coins across different network participants is included in the consensus algorithm. Algorithms they use to eliminate the possibility of double spending and the harmful effects of Byzantine nodes, which is basically just a fancy term for liar. Decentralization. Consensus, or an agreement made between untrusting participants, is achieved on the blockchain by using an algorithm established when the blockchain is created and before it's implemented. Think of it like a terms of use agreement. When you use the blockchain network, you agree that no transaction will be finalized on the ledger unless they meet a predefined set of criteria. When every user has no choice but to comply with these rules, nodes who do not inherently trust each other are able to trust the ledger and make confident decisions based on it. Many blockchain services have stipulations for nodes who wish to mine, restricting the number or type of transactions they are allowed to mine at certain times. Mining nodes also frequently receive some form of incentive for their operations based on the value of the blocks they produce for the blockchain network. In currency ledgers, the incentive is provided in the form of coins. Common consensus algorithms used in financial currencies today include the proof of work and proof of stake used in Bitcoin and Ethereum. Proof of ownership and numerous Byzantine fault tolerance algorithms also exist. Network leaders or mining nodes are also determined by the consensus mechanisms put into place. They may be elected by leadership, may be elected to leadership by participating nodes, or designated based on the stake they have in the network. Most commonly, and for optimal decentralization, leaders rotate on a regular basis. Decentralization was the main purpose of the original blockchain network, Bitcoin, to ensure that fair transactional handling reliable record keeping, and full-scale transparency for participating nodes. Organization and government leaders are less interested in transparency and have begun to develop centralized blockchain solutions, where the network, its rules, and the mining nodes are owned and controlled by the government or organization rather than the participating nodes. They claim this is necessary for security purposes, and for an organization's trade secrets, it makes some sense. A centralized digital currency controlled by our lawmakers is frankly terrifying, even though the Federal Reserve is denying any intention to replace traditional cash and banking practices. I'd like to remind you guys that they also denied any intention on reversing the Roe v. Wade trial outcomes. Let's go next. Hang on. I think I skipped a page. There we go. The cryptographic operations performed within a blockchain are intended to guarantee confidentiality, integrity, non-repudiation, and authentication. The availability of the blockchain ledger is determined by the operating state of participating nodes, because the ledger is typically stored locally on each node as it's updated. The transparent nature of public distributed ledgers reduces the need for internal confidentiality, but does not eliminate it. Blockchain networks can and do use various implementations of symmetric and public key cryptography. English is hard. Digital signatures and hashing algorithms are used to secure the networks as well. Smart contracts, when used in the blockchain network, provide a secure, automatic, and unstoppable execution of processes required when certain conditions are met. Smart contracts are most effective when written in domain-specific languages like Solidity or Viper, which were developed for smart contract development in the Ethereum network. However, some platforms support smart contract development with more mainstream languages such as Java and JavaScript. There's also research being done into natural language smart contract development, which isn't expected to succeed soon. Smart contracts use Oracle systems, which cannot edit data, to access the information relative to their contractual enactment, because they are developed to maintained separately from any blockchain they might be deployed to execute on. The importance of careful smart contract development cannot be understated. Each time the contract executes, it must be trusted to execute the same way and in the same locations, meaning that any bugs must be thoroughly sought out and remedied before the contract is deployed. Side chains can be developed to work alongside a functioning blockchain network. It essentially creates a second chain that can be configured to transfer data with the main chain on the network through a single trusted point. This can permit the network to seclude certain data from general network population and help with the execution of smart contracts. Side chains, like standalone blockchains, can be constructed to require permissions. These permissions can be used to limit access to the data on the chain and create a more centralized peer-to-peer network architecture. Okay, but what about TikTok? Developing a social application with a similar structure to TikTok is backed by a blockchain ledger. That's backed by a blockchain ledger could open up opportunity for a completely new civilization. Artificial intelligence could easily play a role in dissecting the content created and actions taken by network participants, probably mirroring the up and down vote scheme seen in the popular social media application Reddit. We could use the immutable and decentralized nature of the blockchain technology to analyze the moral, economic, political, and spiritual standpoints in the country. We could spot the root cause of disasters like homelessness, climate change, food shortage, and waste, criminal activity, and mental illness. Smart contracts can be used in combination with AI or analytic data to automatically write new policies and laws or announce new leaders in plain language to provide a transparency and accessibility to citizens as they are notified on the same platform where they cast their votes. But what does the leader do? The content of the leader would simply join in the rotation of advertisements that are pushed to citizens as updates to the consensus are made. An official decentralized social media application could ensure that the nation's citizens are seeing and able to contribute and respond to important political, economic, environmental, and educational information in a way that they enjoy. Sidechains could be added and constructed in a way that allows for local communities to post and make resources and make decisions among and about themselves and their resources separately from state or national concerns. Organizations could also join the networks with a sidechain designed to keep their sensitive data secure and remain active in their communities and the national market. In addition to all of this, decentralized social media application would eliminate the suppression of content currently presented by the algorithms in place on traditional social applications that predetermine what users want or can see on their feed without conducting a search. Each chain on the network could be represented by a different feed stream. Local, national, education, political, and even religious content can be automatically and immutably categorized and provided on a fair and easy to locate ledger. Allowing users to choose what they care about the most and provide data that can help create new laws, regulations, economic practices, and cultural changes according to the desires of participants. There are some challenges. Regardless of your political standpoint, it's a fact that our current governing system is known for passing legislation designed to benefit their personal interest and confuse the average citizen. The last thing they are going to want is to give that power up and give it back to you and me, the people. Now, the current government has already begun its colonization of the blockchain technology and what it was originally created to do. By centralizing blockchain to create government-regulated currencies, could essentially give the government total control over how and when we spend our earned financial resources. This terrifies me more than any security or scalability problem that could be presented. Narcissistic abusers make their victims believe that the trauma they experience comes from compassion and love. They're gaslit into believing that they can't trust themselves and that the only thing keeping them alive is their abuser. Writing laws and policies that lead to subpar living standards and censoring history education in public schools are a few examples of narcissism in our current government structure. A child who grows up with narcissistic parents often finds that similar toxic behavior tends to be the theme of their adult lives. This happens because their brains are hardwired to believe that that behavior is what is safe, because that behavior is love. When we the people form our own chain, band together, and rewrite our brains to see the reality of our situation and begin seeking a better life. Scalability and security issues are also present in a project this large. With a team of magical nerds behind it, this challenge doesn't compare to the government and public resistance. I know the things I suggest seem radical, and a lot of people call dreams like this delusions, but the world around me is frightening. I'd rather be radically delusional than scared into submitting to a system that doesn't believe in me. May the fourth be with you. Thanks for listening. Are there any questions?
Sydney, go ahead.
Hello, Alyssa. I really loved your presentation. It was really cool. And the first time I've ever heard about blockchain. That was really cool. Why do you think there is would be a public backlash on blockchain if it could potentially help us in the long run? Why, you know, I know with Congress, you know, and stuff like that, they want to push back a lot of stuff, but why would the public be scared to try this new technology?
I was trying to elaborate that in the narcissistic bit that I put in. Mm. So the American population has been pushed to believe that the government is always right, and they have a hard time with people have a hard time with change naturally. So even like in a small corporate organization, when you have senior employees that have been with a company for 15, 20 years, and now all of a sudden the organization is switching from paper records to digital records, or from their local digital records to cloud computing, the employees there have a hard time accepting that kind of change. So something this big and this massive on such a huge scale would definitely present with some sort of backlash from the public, even though it's designed with their happiness in mind, with their benefit in mind. They might not be able to see that just because of the way that society has traditionally been ran. Does that help or make sense?
Yeah, it does. And once again, thank you for the good presentation on that. Was really cool.
Well, thank you. Jonathan?
Mine's more of a comment, and then I will hang up and listen to your response if you will it that way.
Okay.
So I know that blockchain, I love blockchain. I love the topic. I love the presentation. I think one of the things that is the most scary is the fact that you can make a blockchain with a public key, and when you put your money in, people are always worried, and that people are trying to scare you into not doing it because 3 transactions and your money's gone, right? It's never traceable again. They can trace it to an IP address, but if it was done on somebody else's Wi-Fi, if it was done on a public Wi-Fi or via VPN, it's gone forever because there's no real owner of that wallet for any example or any ideal. But what I find funny, I guess, in society today is we hold on to all of this cash and we put our trust in banking and routing numbers. And that is where all of our finances lie anyhow. So I guess my disconnect is I know it's a new technology and that scares people, but it's not like they can't just hit the erase button anyhow. And the bank account also suddenly registers all zeros. The cash or the monetary thing that you're holding has no backing or has no value. So that's always been my thought behind blockchain. And I just kind of want to see what your thoughts are. And is that on a line that you also share?
Yes and no, because that's kind of why I shied away from the idea of using blockchain for currency, just because in my ideal world, I'm an idealist, 100%. I'm not going to lie. I might be delusional, whatever. But I think that the concept of money is completely ludicrous, period, because we're born on a planet that naturally provides us with food and oxygen and shelter and all of these things that we need to survive and thrive. And instead of tending to those resources and making sure that they last, we segregate ourselves from nature and develop our own sense of value and currency. So the social media application that I'm dreaming about has nothing to do with currency. It has everything to do with the voices of the people that live on this planet and bringing them together in one location where we can collectively make decisions based on what everybody wants and the life that everybody wants to live, and then environmental health, prosperous lives, access to education and healthcare, all things like that. It's just, I think money is ludicrous, is the only point that I can make on that. I would like to destroy all of it in one big fail swoop and just give everybody the space and the freedom and the opportunity to see and interact with their communities and their people so that they can start to create a world where everybody can just sit and breathe and enjoy the earth instead of working 45, 50 hours a week and scrambling to pay off student debts. But that's just me. Thank you guys so much for listening. I've worked really hard on this presentation.
Well, it was a very good presentation, that's for sure. It was excellent.
You did an incredible job.
Yes, it was very good. Richard? Did you have a question?
Open to all questions and comments.
Or was that an accident? You raise your hand. Miss Click. Okay, sounds good. All right. Well, no, excellent. They're all excellent presentations tonight, definitely. And, you know, that's what I say about Masterclass. We're just constantly having these great presentations and topics. It just all goes around. And I think as long as we stay out of certain topics, we'll always make it. I think we all know what that is. If we stay with IT, we're good. I love what you had to say, Alyssa. This is great. And it's always something new that we have to learn because things change so quickly and so often on IT. And we have to keep our eyes open to see what's happening right in the world. It's really our part to keep that, to be awake on what's happening. So great points that you have made. So if there are no more questions, I think we are good to go. I congratulate everybody on their presentations tonight. You did a great job. This will go up on PGI Pods as well, just like all the other ones are on PGI Pods. They're all in the Masterclass stream as well, so you can see all of those as well. And you all have a great night and a great weekend. And thanks for everything that you guys are doing.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
No, just like you have, everybody. That's the key.